Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on Thursday the 22nd of June in a blustery, wind-whipped, still not summer, Reykjavik, Iceland. But I've had loads of good game time this week. I've played a whole bunch of stuff, actually. I think partially because outside sucks, and partially because I've just been in the mood for it. It's been an exciting time for games recently, with all of the news that we've had, all of the showcases that we've had, loads of new games coming out, and a few good ones from my backlog as well. So I'm going to talk about some of them today. The featured review of the show is going to be Dordogne, the French watercolored narrative adventure that came to Game Pass last week. I've been working on my pronunciation of this game, but I don't think it's getting any better. At first I thought I was really clever because I was pronouncing it Dordogne, and I thought it was like that. Turns out it's more like Dordogne. So apologies to any French listeners that I'm not nailing the pronunciation. I'm also going to talk a little bit about a backlog game that I played through and had a great time with, called Gerda, A Flame in Winter. I'm going to talk a little bit about Final Fantasy 16, which is now out and is blowing the doors off. It's a really, really good game. I've been playing some of that. And then we had the Nintendo Direct as well. So lots to talk about in this episode. Thanks for dropping by, and I'm happy that you are here. So the first game I'm going to talk about is a game that I started and finished in two sessions this week, Gerda, A Flame in Winter. This is by Don't Nod, the makers of the game I reviewed last week, Harmony, Fall of Reverie. It's another choice-based adventure, but this time you get a little more control. You get to move the character around. You play as Gerda. She's a nurse in Nazi-occupied Denmark towards the end of World War II. And in this game, you have to just make a lot of choices. You have to talk to a lot of characters and friends. You have to make tense choices about who to get into the good graces of and whether to involve yourself in suspicious activities. Whether to take part in the resistance. And it offers up a whole lot of ethical and moral quandaries. I had a really, really good time with this one. I think this is a really good game. I played it on Switch, where it was great. The reason I'm playing it now is that a DLC just came out, so I was sent a code for the base game, and I really, really wolfed it down. I'm going to gather my thoughts about that one and probably review it next week. But it is a recommendation, especially if you like those Inkle style games, and if you're a Don't Nod fan, then Gerda, A Flame in Winter. I really enjoyed that one, so you'll hear me talking more about it. The other big game that I've been playing is Final Fantasy 16, which came out just yesterday. I played the demo of it when it dropped, I think 1 or 2 weeks ago, and I pre-ordered the game immediately. Not a big Final Fantasy guy over here, but this one has something going on. I played it at midnight when it came out. I was very excited for it to be coming out. I actually went back to the start. The demo does save your progress and let you carry over, but I felt like I needed the combat tutorial again because I've played Final Fantasy VII Remake and a bit of Tales of Arise in the time between the demo and now, and all of those control schemes were a little jumbled together in my head. So I went back to the start and went through that really impressive opening sequence again, skipping the cutscenes, which made it a lot shorter. It's a very story-heavy game. And now I'm a few major story bosses into it, and I'm loving it. It's a spectacular game, really. It's very different to other Final Fantasies. It's like if you took the trajectory that Final Fantasy VII Remake was on with the more action-focused combat, and then took it further. So even less switching between party members, even less juggling your spells and going into menus. It's kind of a pure action game this time around. People have been citing Devil May Cry a lot. I haven't played those games, but I can definitely see some Bayonetta in here, in both the perfect evasion to slow down time mechanic that Bayonetta is famous for, and also in the set pieces. So in this game, it's a medieval, bleak story game, but you do sometimes get to play as the summons from Final Fantasy of old, where you get to summon giant demons like Ifrit, the fire demon, and Shiva. But you get to play as them now. So you get to play these kind of crazy, huge-scale kaiju battles with these monstrous, weighty creatures that are just tearing down buildings as they fight. So cool. And those punctuate the story. The story is actually very good for a game that contains this many cutscenes. I've been fairly glued to them whenever they came up, which is pretty often. And I think that that's because of the voice acting. It has these regional British voice actors. So you have Scottish and Irish and Northern and Southern. And it gives it a lot of colour, but the quality of the voice acting is really something else. It's more like watching a Netflix show than what you might consider to be the very emphatic, amped up, traditional JRPG voice acting style. So it rings true in a way that a lot of these games don't, even though it is still silly and is still spectacular and is still packed with magic and so forth. There's something else to it. It's got a bit more grit. And I really like that about it. So I have been really enjoying Final Fantasy 16. I'm going to be playing a lot more of it. And I think you'll be hearing me talk more about that game in the future as well. So that's what I've been playing. There has been a bit of news as well. There is currently a huge Steam Next Fest on. And I love these Steam Next Fests. I really do. Even if, because I use a Mac, I can't play all the games. But I do play some. And it's a great chance to try things out. Many games that will be later ported to console, but that you can get a little taste of now. So I've downloaded a few. I've downloaded Saltsea Chronicles, which was one of my most anticipated games from the summer announcement season. And I downloaded Crime O'Clock as well, both of which I've talked about previously. So there are loads and loads of demos out there right now, especially if you have a Steam Deck or if you have a Windows machine. So I just thought I would flag that up for people. If you are a Steam player, there are loads of things for you to try right now. There was also a Nintendo Direct. It had been rumored. They sort of announced it the day before, as they usually do. And there were a couple of good things in here. People were more hot on this Direct than I was. For me, it seemed to be lots of old stuff and farming games. But people seemed pretty pleased with what they saw. They are going to release the first two Pikmin games. In fact, I think they might already be out ahead of Pikmin 4, which is coming out pretty soon. We saw a little more of Pikmin 4. It's looking fun. We saw a little bit more of the nighttime stuff, which is quite exciting. I always get a little stressed out by the day-night cycle and the time limit and the threat of losing all of my Pikmin in the field. So maybe they've done something more with that because you can go out at night now. We also saw a new WarioWare game that seems to use the motion controllers on the Switch, so more minigame chaos for fans of WarioWare. And that game will actually come up a little bit in the review later, because Dordogne actually has a whole bunch of minigames in it as well, although of a very different style. There was also the announcement of a remake of Super Mario RPG. I think I might play that. I guess it depends on the price point, but I've never played Super Mario RPG. I missed out on that first time around. I think it was only released in Japan and the US. So I've never played that one. I'm curious to see what it's all about. There were also a whole load of ports. Vampire Survivors was the most recent. That's finally coming to Switch. Metal Gear, the first three games. The Arkham Trilogy and a Star Ocean game. All of those were announced. But the big star of the show, and the last thing in the show, was a new Mario game. And it's a 2D Mario game called Super Mario Bros. Wonder. And this looks really fun. It's like a continuation of what they've been doing with the new Super Mario Bros. Series. So it's got a bit of multiplayer. It's got a bit of chaos. In Super Mario 3D World, you can turn into a cat. And in this one, it looks like you can turn into an elephant. So there's more transformations in it. We saw that they are using pipes differently. So you will sometimes travel horizontally in pipes that crawl along like worms. There were some quite psychedelic elements. It looks like there are loads and loads of fun new mechanics in this one. So I've actually still got a few Mario games that I'm catching up on. I've got a little pile of physical Switch Mario games. I still haven't worked my way through the 3D All-Stars. I still have a new Super Mario Bros. Deluxe. I haven't played that one yet. So it didn't fill me with joy that there is a new Mario Bros. Game coming, a 2D one. I've got loads to play, but it does look really fun, and it could be a fun thing to play around Christmas time. I think they said it was coming out this year, so that could be a good holiday game. There was no mention, of course, of a new Switch, of any new Nintendo hardware. We didn't get any updates on Metroid Prime 4. We didn't get the most in-demand ports of Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. But there was quite a lot in there, so Nintendo fans have something to be happy about. And just before we move on to the main review of the show, do allow me to say this is a patron-supported show. There are 46 patrons who all contribute a little bit of cash every month to the podcast, all of which goes back into the show in one way or another. You can join up if you would like to. You get 10 bonus episodes about all kinds of video game things, off-topic things, video game music, travel and other stuff, literature and movies, just all kinds of chat. So if you'd like to hear those and join the Discord community, which is a lovely corner of the internet full of friendly people, and join me and all of the other patrons there, you can head over to patreon.com/gamingin the wild to become a supporter, get all those bonus episodes, join the Discord and get other fun perks too. Thanks very much to all of my existing patrons, and thank you to you if that sounds good to you. It's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And with that said, let's move on to the featured game of this episode, Dordogne. So Dordogne is a game that came out just last week in June of 2023. It is developed by Un Je Ne Sais Quoi, the art company of the director Cédric Babouche, who is a longtime animator and artist. He also does some transmedia type stuff. This was made with help from Umanimation, and it was published by Focus Entertainment. It has a really lovely soundtrack by Super Naive. I've been listening to it a little bit since completing the game. We're listening to some of that music now, and it will be peppered throughout the podcast. It's a lovely soundtrack. It's available on PC and Xbox. It was on Day One Game Pass, and it ran well on my Series S with a couple of infrequent small hitches, but a pretty clean game. How Long to Beat has it at 3.5 to 4 hours, and Metacritic scores this one at 70 to 80 across the formats. I think there is some broad critical agreement on this game, and I will slot into that as well with my thoughts on it. And the developers describe this one by saying, "Immerse yourself in a unique narrative experience and explore the thousand summer colours of Dordogne as you revisit your childhood to uncover the lost family secrets in this touching, formative journey." And I say about this one that Dordogne is a short, beautiful game that tells a compact, emotional story. Its visual style and ambiance is breathtaking and captures the feeling of childhood summers, but the gameplay can be a chore, both figuratively and often quite literally. So this is an interesting little game. It's one that I first saw in a Nintendo Direct. I think that was probably a good spot to launch it, given the look of it and the vibe of it. It's definitely like a low-key game. It's a very colourful game. It has some childlike elements and some story elements. It's also a very good Game Pass game. It's a good length. It's something that you could play on a Sunday or in two sittings across a weekend. I always love a short indie game on Game Pass, especially when it's as interesting as this little game. I'm really glad to have played this one. I am going to critique it somewhat harshly, but I do think it is worth playing. So I think it's worth saying that here at the outset. And the scenario of the game is that you begin as Mimi, who is a grown-up woman who is going to a house that she has not been to since she was a child. And you drive through the countryside, you see this nice cutscene with this little 2CV rounding tight corners as she drives through a forest. She's clearly going out into the wilds. And you get to the house, but the reason that you are going there, it turns out to be quite a sad reason. It's because Mimi's grandmother has passed away, and she needs to go and visit the house to set things in order. And as you are trying to find your way in, like you have to retrieve a key from a mailbox, you have to find your way into the house and open the blinds and all of that kind of stuff, you're getting texts from friends. Mimi in the modern day has a mobile phone, like a little old Nokia, and she gets texts from people. Some are friends who are saying supportive stuff. Some seem to be either family members or other involved parties who seem to be angry. And you do get a feeling right from the start that Mimi's family situation is a little bit fraught. And in this modern day setting, it's quite gloomy. I think maybe it's autumn or winter. It seems a little dark. The house is dark. The garden is in disrepair. There are no lights in the windows. All the blinds are drawn. And after you find your way inside, Mimi starts to remember her time here as a child, things that have drifted away from her memory, some things that she just doesn't remember at all but wants to. And as she starts to look around the house, she sees things that start to jog her memory. She sees pictures and she finds old letters. And as you start to explore, lots of little things start to jog Mimi's memory until you go into a flashback, basically. There's a little loading screen It looks like you're moving through the cosmic realm or something like that. And before you know it, you are playing as Mimi many years ago as a young girl who is visiting this house for the first time. You will play much of the game as Mimi's child self, but you will also come back to the present as she experiences these memories that you are playing through. So you move between this dark present day and this halcyon childhood experience that she had. And it's a very different atmosphere back in the past. It's much more colourful. The plants are growing, the flowers are blooming. It's summertime. It's a summer holiday, and things were very different back then. And the young Mimi gets dropped off at the door by her parents, reluctantly, for a summer with Grandma. And it's a familiar scene that I think we can all relate to from one perspective or another, either by being left somewhere as a kid that you don't want to be, or maybe leaving your own reluctant kids somewhere if you're a parent. So Mimi starts out at the house, and she's a little scared. She's a little shy, a little spiky and stroppy. She's out of her element and in an unfamiliar situation. And we get to see how that plays out. She starts to get to know her grandma a little bit, who is an outdoorsy, independently minded, quite free-thinking seeming character who does let Mimi do a lot of her own thing. And as this story progresses, we'll untangle some of the mystery of what happened back then in the day and what Mimi's idyllic summer turns out to be and how all of the events of the past have influenced the way that things are in the present. And it's worth talking about the graphics of this game. It really is quite a spectacular-looking game, quite a singular-looking game, I would say. All of the graphics are watercolored, with watery washes of color, of bright blue skies and bright green foliage. There are sketched lines. There are scribbles of paint. All of the colors bleed into the other colors that in that washed watercolor style. It has a really fantastically vivid color palette. But it's more than just a watercolor painting being used as a background. It takes a part in the 3D space as well. So the drawings and paintings are used as textures here and wrapped around 3D objects in a really interesting way. I would say it's probably a 2.5D game in some way. You don't have camera control, for example. It's always like a set position. But as you move around, things do come in and out of foreground and background. So when you go into the cluttered living room of your grandma, who lives alone, she kind of does her own thing. You know, it's a bit of a lean-to, adapted living situation. You can walk behind the sofa, and as you get closer to it, the brush strokes of that sofa will come closer to the camera. And as you go into the back, you will see the details of the place where she sits and paints and reads her magazines. And all of these little details are really beautifully rendered. And the painted texture being wrapped around 3D objects is quite beautiful sometimes, actually. It's not something that I have seen before. There are games that do similar stuff, I guess, like, you know, the Greece of the world. And I guess Toem was a little bit like that with the line-drawn monochrome style. But they have such different art styles that this really does feel very much like its own thing. And it really does bring this game to life. Like later in the game, when you'll go to visit a bustling marketplace, lots of people running around, you'll go kayaking down a river with some beautiful water effects, rolling waves as you take a long, lazy row down the river. The game just springs to life because of this visual style. It's a pleasure to look at all times. All of this watercolored scenery pouring by, these little impressionistic scribbles of houses on hills in the background. It's like wandering through the pages of a watercolor pad or walking through a sketchbook in a way, in the best possible sense. Also, the style does help to tell the story. The present day is dark and the flashbacks are so bright and colorful and vivid. You really do feel the difference in mood as you flash between these two eras. And I think as well that the impressionistic style of the visuals, this sort of loose representations of reality, helps to accentuate the fact that some of these things are memories too. Because, you know, we don't really usually, I mean, at least I don't, I guess everyone remembers differently, but I'll remember, you know, like smells and impressions, I'll remember colors and emotions. I won't have like a DVD, Blu-ray recording of my memories that I can just refer back to. It is impressionistic and it is loose and personal. And I get that feeling from the graphics of this game. So I think that it all ties together very well, the visual style and the story elements too. And it's the most striking and successful thing about the game, I would say. I also really do like the music. It's this lovely light wash of electronic sounds, sometimes with, as we just heard, saxophone, sometimes with soft beats to it. There is another kind of music in there as well. There is some more retro stuff that you'll hear crackling over the radio, and some more sort of diegetic music that you'll hear in situ. But it was a really lovely accompaniment for this journey, and it added warmth and texture. It gave it an extra layer of dreaminess to be listening to the lovely Foley sound and the really, really nice music. And as for the gameplay in this game, well, the game is cut up roughly into days. It passes like a vacation in a way. Like in the first day, Mimi first she'll unpack and things like that, and then she'll sleep. And then you'll flash forward to the next day. So there's a little break there. And Mimi wakes up. You get her out of bed. You get her dressed behind a screen. You brush her hair. And you brush her teeth. And you go outdoors. And whatever the activity of the summer's day is what you'll be doing. And sometimes that is gardening. Sometimes, like, your grandma might want to plant some vegetables or to repot something. And sometimes she might want to cook, and you'll be helping and assisting. Sometimes you'll be playing, just running around the place. Sometimes you'll have like a trip to the market to get supplies, or a picnic, or a little trip kayaking and that kind of thing. So it really is like real things that might happen on a long, languorous summer's day. And early on, your grandma gives you a map. And I was overjoyed to see this, like perhaps overly so, because when you unfold the paper map, you can see that there is a long river valley, there is a village, there is another farm or something. There are 6 or 7 different locations. And my eyes lit up when I saw this, and I suddenly got very excited about being able to wander this world and just to explore. That didn't really happen. It's quite linear. Scenes are generally very contained and in a set order. You can only do what you're meant to do, and there isn't really any element of exploration or choice beyond just looking around the corners to find little secret pickups and stuff. So it's a bit more linear than I initially thought, which is a slight bummer. And it is a common thread in all the reviews that I've read about this game that more freedom would have been nice. It would have been nice to really be able to wander this world, you know, a little bit more like when you're in Zelda game and you can go to Kakariko Village and look around the different places, go in different houses. That might have been really, really nice in this game, but the structure of the game is very linear and set. But within each scene, you do get to run around and look at things, and I like that from day to day, Mimi's activities changed. And even in the house, from day to day, Mimi's responses to things would change. You can look at the same things again and again. Like on the first day, you might look at some pictures. Mimi in the future can look at the same pictures on the wall, and you'll get older and younger Mimi's response to them. And their responses will change over time from day to day as they get more of an affinity for, or they grow used to the setting that they are in. I thought that was a nice touch. There are also collectibles. You can collect big words that will appear in a white bubbly font over the backdrop. They're pretty on the nose, things like adventure as you're setting out on a walk, or sadness if something bad has happened. You collect those words by clicking on them, and you can use them later in your journal. You also find letters from the past. They're just tucked into, you know, folders or on tables or in drawers. And they're literal letters that Mimi will hold up to the camera and you can read them. And they start to fill in a little bit of the troubled family history that your grandma has been through prior even to Mimi's childhood visit. But they are quite chunks. They are big blocks of text, you know. It's like a full A4 page. And they really do slow you down. So if you're having fun being Mimi and enjoying this colourful world, being confronted with a page of A4 text, I wasn't quite gelling with that. Something about being made to stop playing whilst engaged in the game made me just sort of skim the letters. So I didn't really study them. I didn't really deep read them. I just skimmed them and got the gist. So I think that the true detective players out there could probably get a sharper picture and piece together more of the little jigsaw puzzles and clues from the past to get a sharp picture of the story. You also find cassette tapes with crackly old bits of voice on them. These are really cute and candid. They're like Mimi might try to interview her grandma, or you might find old tapes from the early days of grandma and grandpa's relationships, things like that. So you get these old conversational fragments and recollections, cute little stories. But you can only listen to them in the menu, which is a bit of a bummer. This happens a lot in games, though, you know. I kind of wish that you could listen as you walk, you know, so you could explore and listen to a tape at the same time rather than having to sit for 30 seconds and just look at a menu screen. So it's another thing that slows you down. I wish that you could press play and then keep walking. But the main gameplay, I guess, is the mini games. So there are lots and lots of mini games in this, like the plant potting, the table setting, the cooking, the making of tea. There is a mini game for each of them. They're a little bit clumsy. I would say that these are the weakest point of the game and make up the majority of the gameplay, which isn't great. Imagine WarioWare if all of the games were chores. Instead of doing crazy Wario stuff, you literally just have to tidy up. So it's lots and lots of little domestic chores, which I'm not against in principle, I will say. Like, I quite like domestic or quotidian or small activities in video games. But the way that they're presented here isn't great. And I'll tell you why, for me. They all seem to have a few too many steps. So, for example, if you're boiling tea, this is not a simple process, or rather, it is simple, but just not fun. So you have to hold onto the kettle lid by clicking on it using a cursor on a controller, a pet hate of mine. And then you have to use the stick to actually move the cursor up whilst holding down to pull up the kettle lid. It's going to take you a couple seconds. It's a bit clunky and annoying. You then have to take the kettle with the cursor over to the sink. Then you have to click on the tap, turn the tap by pulling up on the stick. You got water. Then you have to close the kettle lid again, replace the kettle, hit the power switch. So how many steps is that? That was like six steps. It's going to take you 20 seconds or something. But it's a video game, you know. Like, can't we just pick up the kettle, hold it near the tap, and then place it back down and it starts to boil? We don't have to do this like granular step-by-step process. It was just very boring and tedious, if I'm honest. And this is reflected throughout all of the mini games. For example, opening a door. First, you have to click on the latch and then pull while you're holding the button to open the latch. Then you have to hold the key and turn it and push it forward and turn again and take it out and then hold the handle down and push the door. And if you think about like Zelda games where if you have the key, if you walk to the door opens. There is no need for all of this busy work in the game. And it's a shame when gameplay feels obligatory, like a gameplay goes here shaped hole. And I think I see what they were going for here. They were going for some kind of slowness to reflect the pace of the life of your grandma and this summer countryside life. And that's fine, but they're just not fun, honestly. They're really, really boring, and I just kind of sighed my way through them. The controls are also a bit off in these, like trying to, for example, brush Mimi's teeth with this cursor controller. You end up just brushing all over your face, and it just makes a big silly mess, and not in a good way. It just felt bad, and I guess it did simulate to some degree like childlike miscoordination or uncoordinatedness, but there were too many steps and too little precision. It's just not a good recipe. The final part of the gameplay is at the end of each day, you have a journal which your grandma gives to you. You can fill it in. It's a little bit like the game Season, which had a much more fully formed version of scrapbooking, I guess. In this, you can pick the words that you've picked up and arrange them into a poem, which is kind of cool. Like, you can pick the theme and then it auto-generates lines, and then you pick the lines you want and you can assemble a kind of haiku based on the day that you've had, what you want to take from it. I quite enjoyed that. You can also put in an audio recording that you've taken. You can put in a sticker, a photograph, and you can assemble your day in a way that you like and then flick through it later if you want to. You'll also see how many collectibles you found and how many you missed. So it's like a little review of the end of your day, and it becomes a cute little routine at the end of Mimi's summer days. that she will fill out her scrapbook when she gets home. It's bare bones and simple, but it was a really nice touch. And the way that the holiday unfolds is really nice. Like, the things that you do from day to day are different. Like, it's really nice when you just knock around the house with your grandma for a while doing bits and pieces, but eventually you start to gain confidence and you start to go out more. You start to get a little more adventurous. Like, you might go and find like a little forest clearing and you might start to sort of see the world a little differently. And it's really nice to feel Mimi's growth from this shy city girl in an unfamiliar place. She is absorbing lessons from her grandmother, her grandmother's internal sense of adventurousness. She does seem like quite a bold character, and she does seem to be quite an original thinker. And she sort of slowly and carefully prods Mimi towards that just by letting her do her own thing, letting her express herself. And the conversations that they have together are really nice on that theme. And, you know, the grandma trying to remember her own childhood, sometimes getting things wrong and having to set them right. It has a nice humanity to the whole thing. And that feeling kind of permeates the game. I thought the writing was really good in this game, actually. I felt like the characters were multidimensional. They weren't always perfect. There was more than one thing going on in the head. And some of the situations that came up felt quite good, too. So it's a nice little game. The gameplay isn't great. It looks beautiful and it's lovely to play, lovely to look at, lovely to a story to experience, and lovely to listen to. The music is really, really nice too. But it is a chore at times, but it's only a 3.5 hour game. So I think it was worth playing, even with those caveats, for me, for sure. And before we get to the end of the review, I thought it might be fun to talk spoilers a little bit, because the story is quite interesting. So if you are yet to play Dordogne, then now would be the time to bow out, because I am going to talk a little bit about what we discover about the past and how it relates to the present now. And if you want to play the game, then this is nice for you to discover for yourself. So please do bow out now if you don't want spoilers. As I have said, I sped read some of the letters in this game. So I have assembled my own little picture of what went down. Some of this is based on my observations. Some of it is based on stuff that people have mentioned in the show's Discord. So it's a little patchwork understanding of it. I think the main story strands that stuck out to me were that Mimi's grandfather didn't have a great time later in life based on some kind of traumatic or troublesome events that occurred. Around, like, before Mimi even got there, actually. So he was a teacher, and he had befriended one of his school-age children that were under his care and sort of tended to him. This kid was a little wild, not from a good home. Things seemed to be going wrong in his life, so he kind of took him under his wing. But this ended up going very wrong. We learned that he was suspended from his duties. And throughout the game, the grandma would always correct Mimi whenever she used the word crazy and say, please don't use the word crazy. In a few of the letters, it seemed like the parents of Renaud were accusing Mimi's grandpa of being a crazy person, of going too far, of almost hounding them. This was a situation that it felt very real life in a way. It's a miscommunication that has just gone wrong. So the teacher grandfather thinks he is in the right, that he's protecting Renaud from abuse, basically, and from mistreatment and abandonment and like misparenting. But the parents push back and say that he's a busybody and that he doesn't understand their life and that he's a posh guy who is trying to talk down to them. And it turns into this community uproar. And the story kind of touches on a little bit of French politics of that era, I guess. It sounds like there were clashes between groups in France about religion and modern opinions when it comes to parenting, and that this incident had turned into a flashpoint for that. So yeah, the grandfather didn't do well out of that situation. And I'm missing some of the finer details, but there was enough there to get the picture that there was heartache, that there was community strife. that things turned very sour. And that's the backdrop in which Mimi arrives. And this did have lasting repercussions, and it did reflect on her childhood visit to the farm. She does meet Renaud and becomes friends with him. She finds that he's wearing the watch that her grandfather had given to him, that he was then accused of stealing, and it was just this whole drama that just rolled on and on. But she does end up befriending him, this urchin, I think his name was Renaud, and they have some adventures together. That's some of the sweet scenes of the game, really, when you find this kid who has turned a cave into his own little den and who collects things and has light fingers. But it does all come to a head on the day of a flood when Mimi sneaks out to go kayaking, and she has this newfound sense of confidence and adventure that has been imbued in her both by her grandmother, by this countryside surrounding, by her newfound freedom, and by Renaud as well and his laissez-faire view when it comes to climbing things and doing things and taking things. She gets into trouble, the kayak overturns, and she's washed away and nearly drowns. And the outcome of all of this is that Mimi's father has opinions about his own upbringing at the hands of Mimi's grandmother, and decides that grandmother is dangerous, that she's a little too irresponsible in some way, like her old-fashioned ways of letting kids go out and clamber around on cliffs and climb trees. It's different. It's at odds with the modern way of parenting. And we get the sense that carried over to their relationship too, and that Mimi was never allowed to come back for another summer, and that there was a rift in the family because of this too. So this childhood summer was the only summer she got to spend in Dordogne. And when you put all of this together, and I'm speaking it back now, it does sound like quite a heavy story. And I guess it is quite a heavy family story, but it didn't feel that way as I was playing it somehow. Like, all of that is there. It's all context, and it all surrounds and forms the experience that you're playing. But I think that, like, my mind just went to the childhood freedom part of it all. My mind was more drawn to that side of things, like the adventure, the sense of individuality growing. And the nice moments just sort of spoke to me. And all of the letters I was reading, they were a little more distant and far away. They felt like supplementary events to this story, to the core of this story in some way. And I think that what parts of the story draw your attention and how much of a detective you feel like being in piecing together all of these little clues will dictate what you think this game is about and what you think the tone of this game is. There is definitely like an undertone of melancholy to it and family drama and trauma. But honestly, when I look back on this game, I think I'm just going to remember running through the forest and climbing a cliff and being brave as this young girl, and kind of the memories that she forms, the friendships that she makes, the experiences that she has in the marketplace, like learning to trust herself, learning to do more even when she doesn't feel confident, and her growing sense of self. The bright colours of the summer, all of that stuff is what will stick with me about this game. But I think for other people, this could be quite a melancholic game to look back upon if you do focus on those other elements of the story. So just to finish off with a little recap, the good things about this game, the look is mesmerising. You've just got to see this game. If you don't have an Xbox, if you play on another console, just check out screenshots, check out a trailer of this. I absolutely loved the kayaking sequences where the 2D world became 3D, and the water effects are lovely. The rolling water in contrast to the watercolor, the way that the scenery glides by, the way that the textures are wrapped onto objects, the way that this world is constructed is just wonderful. And it has this lovely handmade, unfinished feel that I felt leaned into the memory aspect of it all. The music is lovely. It's an idyllic soundtrack, a smooth ambient electronic music, very easy to listen to, and it really accentuated key moments in the game, whether the darker moments or the lighter ones. I love the setting of rural France, the cultural references, the sunlight, the weather, the thriving plants, that bright colour palette. You do get a feeling of peak summer, and you can almost feel the warmth and smell the air. I loved the earthy tasks that you do, of planting things and patting in the soil, all of that stuff. Even if the games themselves weren't fun, the range of tasks and the vibe of the whole thing just really hung together for me. The characters are great. I loved Grandma, I loved Renaud and Mimi. They felt real, they felt like multidimensional. They're not always perfect. Sometimes they're living, sometimes they are spiky, sometimes they have things that they are hiding or don't want to say, or sometimes they say too much. Video game characters often do not have layers or any level of complexity. I've spoken about it before on the show that characters often will be assigned one personality trait and that's who they are. In this game, they felt like real people. Maybe some of this stuff is autobiographical or from experience, but it definitely was good writing, whether that's the case or not. I mean, all of this adds up to a lovely mood that really did feel like a series of memories. It felt like a step back into childhood, someone else's childhood, and it successfully evokes that feeling of a summer vacation out in the sticks. And the family drama that surrounds the game too felt very real, like the events that occurred could well be real events. It didn't feel at all contrived. And I liked that it was kind of hands-off with the storytelling, like it's there if you want it, basically. As for the bad stuff, the gameplay is extremely straightforward, serviceable. The movement is stiff as you're running around. It never feels great to move in this game, which is a shame. There are photography and sound recording mechanics, but they felt wasted. You barely get to use them. And so when it came to time to do my scrapbook, I'd hardly gathered anything because you cannot photograph most of the time, so I just kind of forgot it existed. Bit of a shame. Again, I thought of the game Season, A Letter to the Future, where you can cycle freely around this world, choose where you want to go, record and photograph anything, and so your scrapbook felt personal and rich. Here it's just a very squashed, small version of it, just with stickers that you found and one picture that you're forced to take in the story. Didn't feel very expressive, apart from the poetry, which I thought worked really well. The minigames, I would say that they were hit and miss, but the more that I think about them, I don't think I liked any of them, actually. I think they were all misses. Like, the minigames were just not good. Too many steps, not fun to control. Filler content. I like the atmosphere that they were going for, but the gameplay itself is just a drag. So overall, I'm definitely glad that I played this one. I think for the playtime, it earned it, both through the aesthetic experience and through a nice, real-feeling story and the real characters that I met, and the summertime childhood holiday feeling, and like far distant events that were serious, like family events that you might remember from long ago. All of that is packed into this game. Really glad that I played it, despite its flaws. That is Dordogne. So I hope you enjoyed that review of Dordogne. Fun little game, a nice Game Pass game, a perfect Game Pass game. Really lovely looking little thing, really personal, made by a small team, and it just rings true in a really cool way. And if you've played this game, you've got different opinions, if you've got different theories, or feel like it is about something else, let me know. I'm on Twitter at Gaming in the Wild, and I'd love to hear from people who listen to the show. Let me know what you're playing. Let me know if there's something you'd like me to cover, whether it's backlog or new or under the radar. You can also find me on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, all the social media as Gaming in the Wild. And all of those links are at gamingindthewild.com. You can also join up and be a supporter of this podcast in small ways, like by leaving a star rating on Spotify or a review if you're on Apple Podcasts, or sharing it with a friend, which is one of the best ways to support this podcast. Or by becoming a patron at patreon.com/gamingindthewild and joining the Discord, getting those bonus episodes and being a part of the whole thing. So that's it from me for this week. I'll be back next week with a review of Gerda, A Flame in Winter, I think, and probably a little more Final Fantasy chat. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. Take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.